It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and tune in as well. Our podcast, if you can't tune in for the entire show, but you want to listen to more later, is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We are also streaming live on video all 3 hours at the Team 980. Hoffman Show coming in hot. Get it while you can. Just 2 days of me this week, and then I have to tend to a family matter. So get it while you can. And our plan was for today to do some defensive previewing, like lots of defensive previewing, and basically turn the next two shows, since I'm only going to be here for 2 days this week before training camp opens later in the week, to massive preview days. Like, we know a lot of you are tuning in ahead of training camp just to get like, hey, I've been off all summer. I've paid attention a little bit around the draft. People tune in and out, and that's fine. You got other things that you want to listen to or pay attention to. And now that training camp is here, you're locked back in, and we welcome you with open arms. Say, hey, nice to see you. Where you been? Do you have a good off season? Great. Excellent. But we got to start the show with something else today, because the president of the United States said so. And we're going to do it off the top here. And I don't have a whole lot to say about it that I haven't said already in previous shows and in previous times talking about these types of things. But I think I'm going to try to boil it down to what's important. I'm not going to get into a fight about the validity of the name or not. But President Trump, who is, you know, the current chief executive in the White House and thus has the power to do certain things relative to the District of Columbia, inserted himself into the RFK Stadium situation and did so in a way that I think was designed to be a red meat to his base politically. And that's a choice that he made. By now, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't even mean to be coy about it. The President Trump said on his social media website, Truth Social, yesterday that he would like to see the name return to the old moniker. And if not, then he would scrap the deal that is, or he would not facilitate a deal for the Commanders at RFK. Now, whether he meant that he will not step in on the Commanders' behalf as they try to get city council to agree to their terms, or whether he would, by executive action, cancel the lease on RFK that was given to DC in the law last year, which he has the ability to do, that is unclear at this time. Hopefully it's something we never find out. Here's what I will say on the, like, I guess I have two things to say on this. One is very direct and to the point of the outcome. And the other is about the process, which is, to me, more important on a much larger level that is going to turn this show into a politics show, not a sports show, for 10 minutes. And that is this. On the substance, the name is not going back. Because the Commanders, or I should say, my prediction is the name would not go back because the Commanders would rather remove themselves from the thumb of the federal government and just say, fine, we'll go back to Maryland. We'll build on the 200 acres that we own already in Landover. We'll work with Wes Moore on that site and try to both build a stadium that we want and make sure we build out the area in a way that works for the community, then have our name or any other aspect of our franchise dictated to us by the White House, no matter who's in office. Like, we're just not dealing with that. So if this is a possibility that the White House might threaten the lease for any number of things that they don't like about the branding of the team, the owners of the team, no matter which political party is in office, to say, we don't have to deal with that if we're in Maryland. We don't have to deal with that if we're in Virginia. My guess is before they would succumb to changing the name and just be like, all right, President Trump, here's what you got. Get involved here and get us a deal. My guess is they would go, we're not dealing with this. We're not playing these games. And they also don't have a ton of time to play games, right? They want to open by 2030. That is the most important stated goal. And if there are delays in the president getting involved, even if he's trying to help them, but it ultimately pushes back because city council is like, whoa, 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 like, we don't want this, that could push it out to where it effectively kills the deal with DC. So the if you are listening to me right now and you want the team name back and RFK, I'm telling you, it is extraordinarily unlikely you're going to get both. And in fact, you are more likely to get neither if you are rooting for the president's involvement here, which again, I know, like, look, be adults about this. A lot of y'all have been listening to me for a long time. I think you know where I stand politically. But this is not me inserting my own political views into this. This is me telling you the facts on the ground as they are. And I know that when things are touching the political third rail, who the messenger is tends to be how you feel about this. And so if that makes you, you're an idiot, you know what you're talking about, like, that's fine. There's nothing I could have said outside of shocking you by saying exactly what you want to hear. Whatever, right? Facts on the ground are you don't want to be under the thumb of someone who you don't have to be under the thumb of. That's how power works, right? If we could all operate independently of our bosses, all due respect to my bosses, we'd probably do that. If there was a way to do it, but we operate under the systems in which we exist because they give us the resources. They give us a paycheck. Like, we're a part of a society. But if you can opt out of having people control over you, you tend to do that. And I think Josh Harris and the ownership group would probably just say, we don't need to deal with this. We're out. So that's the facts on the ground part of it. The other part of it is the one political argument I've been willing to make on this show over years, without any care of what anybody thinks about it, because I just so fundamentally think it's correct and that it's so fundamentally obvious, and this is yet another example of it, that it's ridiculous. And I also know that, statistically speaking, I am preaching to the choir in our audience here, and that is, this is yet another example of why DC needs statehood. The fact that this can happen is utterly ridiculous. I am a citizen of the District of Columbia. I am an adult. I pay taxes. I make choices on who I vote for. I walk around as a functioning adult member of society, as do 700,000 of my neighbors, if you will. It's more people than in the state of Wyoming, more people than insert other fun facts about DC statehood here. The fact that the president can do this, and again, President Trump, or if this happened under President Biden, a future president, insert Democratic person here, or future president, Republican person here. It's not about who is in the office. It's about the office itself and the power they choose to exercise. The fact that this can happen only in the district is ridiculous. If the stadium fight was happening in Virginia or Maryland, this wouldn't be a thing. If the Packers want a new stadium in Green Bay, the president can't put his thumb on the scale. If it's happening in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Kansas City, cities, big and small across the country, blue, red, whatever, blue state, red city, it doesn't matter, except for in this one. And I'm just supposed to accept that? I'm just supposed to be like, yep, I'm a powerless person, me paying my federal taxes, y'all have fun. I clearly have so much access to political power that it's worth me not having senators or being able to vote for the people who get to decide on the stuff around me without federal oversight. And by the way, if you want to play that game, he's your president. Yeah. You want to know who didn't vote for him? The District of Columbia. And by the way, if you go county by county data and all the surrounding Maryland and Virginia suburbs, this particular president wasn't voted for either. By any large group, any way you draw the line, in around this area where the Washington Commanders would draw the circle of their fan base. With that said, I also don't want someone who I quote unquote agree with, a Democratic president or a progressive president or whatever. I don't want them to be able to do this either. Like, I don't want politicians involved in sports in this way. They have much more important things to do, and this is not part of their jobs. When Congress got involved in the Commanders because of a toxic workplace investigation where there was potential criminal action and it was clear the NFL had tried to cover it up in some way, there was financial situations, tax fraud, like that is where politics and sports can cross, because that is where they belong to cross. In the same way that politics can cross with any multi-billion-dollar corporation. But I don't want the White House telling Microsoft what its branding is going to be. That would be ridiculous. What Amazon, what its branding. If they want to try to bust up a conglomerate, fine. Like, you can try to pass the laws in Congress because that's how our country's set up. And that's not the stuff I'm going to talk about on this show because we're a sports show and we're going to spend most of this sports show talking about the Washington Commanders' defense in 2025, the effect Von Miller might have on it. Like, we're going to do sports stuff. But unless you want a Democrat, if they're elected in 2028 or 2032 or whatever, to have the power to revoke the lease at RFK because they disagree with anything about the franchise, then you don't want President Trump doing this. The power is the power. And just whether it agrees with you or not isn't the measure by which we should assess power being used. If you wouldn't like the same thing happening back at you, then you should be able to agree with the other side, shake hands, and say, we agree that we don't want this to happen and neither of us will do it, and let's put that into law. And whether that is congressional power or executive power federally over the District of Columbia, whether that is gerrymandering, whether that is any number of political issues, if you agree that it's wrong, you should have the willingness to step up and say, I don't want that being done to me, and we're not going to do it to you, and we're going to agree to that, and we're going to put it in writing. That's how the government is supposed to work. And so, functionally speaking, this is yet another example of how ridiculous it is that we have to deal with this stuff in this city in a way that nobody else in the entire country has to. And I would be saying the same thing if this was 10 years ago and President Obama was in office and he decided he would not support in that time frame, in that timeline, if he was like, if I look up the old team name in the dictionary, it's defined as a slur. And so I'm not going to do that. Like, I didn't love when Mayor Bowser and others did that about the RFK Stadium site, saying we won't do this if the name won't change. I didn't love that. Did I agree that I wanted the name changed? Sure. But do I want politicians holding that kind of decision, which is not theirs, over the heads of an organization? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But at least when it was DC City Council doing it, it was on behalf of people who had elected them within DC. No one in Wyoming voted for DC City Council. No one in California, no one in anywhere else but the district voted for DC City Council. So at least they had a little bit more of a say, or a little bit more of a stake, a little bit more of a correct spot to at least say an argument to say that this is my place. The federal government, get out of our stuff. And to me, it's that simple. If you don't want it done to you, why are you okay with it just because it gets the result that you want? Because if that's the case, it can be done right back to you in 4 or 8 years or however long it takes for the politics to switch sides in this country, the parties to switch sides in this country. And if you don't understand that argument, I just can't help you. So, yeah. DC statehood, please. Let us be adults. We're fully capable of it on our own. Happy to take whatever else comes with that. Please just leave us alone. DC City Council and the mayor's office and the commanders, please figure out your freaking deal. And to go back to the first point, I think there's no way that the name changes. And the team would rather just be like, we're not dealing with the federal government. We tried. They're impossible to deal with. They're obnoxious. And thus, they would go to Maryland. Probably Virginia could make a play too. And that's where I'm at. And that's all we're going to talk about in terms of that on the show today. When we get back, biggest defensive questions on the field in 2025, because we're a sports show and I'd like to stay that way. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We have a short segment here, so we'll start the defensive preview coming up in 8 minutes. I think I went a little harder in the last segment than I intended to, Anthony.
It's
been pent up all day. You don't think I went like too crazy?
No.
Okay. The logic train. I think I get most annoyed when stuff doesn't make sense. And I just feel like this is something that is so obvious on like the, hey, leave us alone, DC statehood of it all. And the other thing too that I think is really important point to make is just like, y'all all deserve better. Like, this franchise was in the mud, and not in like a glorifying it kind of way. Not like we came up out the mud. Like, we were in the mud, but actually half of it was poop. For how long? 30 years under Snyder? And finally, last year, we're moving forward. Like, everything's forward. There's momentum. Everything's positive. It's like, hell yeah, we got the quarterback. Ownership doesn't, you know, isn't going to make us trip over our shoelace, even when we have a nice thing. Coaching staff is great. Front office seems super competent. And here comes this thing. And, like, they're even doing the right stuff when it comes to, like, honoring the past, the good parts of it. The uniforms, they're trying to get the RFK Stadium site back. Like, they're doing the right stuff about the past without dragging all of us collectively backward. And the fights that are happening around the name are so reminiscent of Snyder era stuff. And it's just like, don't Washington football fans deserve to enjoy more than one singular season of nonsense? Like, didn't we suffer enough? And we collectively also, it's not like we sat there and took it for Snyder. Yeah, there's some people that were like, oh, he's not that bad. They were lying to themselves because they were protecting themselves, and that's fine. But, like, nobody was like, yeah, actually, Snyder's awesome. There were so many people that were like, how do we get him? Tell us what we have to do to get him out. Please, NFL, do something. Get him out. Like, people knew, and they spoke up. And instead of just being like, all right, moving forward. And I loved what not that I love the name Commanders. I've been on the record with that, too. I'm not like, hey, this name actually rocks. But what I have said is something similar to what B. Mitch said on his show today. It's like, it's the people that give you the memories. And as the name Commanders gets associated with Jaden Daniels and, you know, hopefully Terry McLaurin, and he retires a Commander, and on down the list of Mike Sainer still, Josh Connerly, Trey Amos, that the name Commanders invokes the same feelings that the former name invokes for people that were 20 years old in 1990 when they're winning, you know, in the middle of their Super Bowl run. And so that's, to me, where I'm at with that part of it too, is just like, man, it'd be really cool if we could just move forward. Man, it'd be really cool if we could just have some fun. Man, it'd be really cool if we didn't get dragged into political fights that we didn't ask for. We're already having to deal with enough politics with the stadium thing, but that's part of it. The city of Buffalo and the state of New York, they had their thing. Other stadiums, like, you know, San Francisco, got kind of ugly when they moved to Santa Clara, and the whole deal. Like, we understand there's going to be a little bit of politics, but it'd be cool if it stayed local. It'd be cool if the president wasn't involved. Did I just turn into Stephen A.?
Nah.
I just turned into someone else. Whose tone was that? Na 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 na. It'd be really cool if.
Actually, it did give a little.
It was a little Stephen A.
Yeah, it was.
Who, by the way, bro, did you see his take on the stadium?
I did not.
Here's something everybody can get united around. Stephen A. said on First Take today, this is real. I heard the sound myself because I saw the quote from Awful Announcing, and even I, King Stephen A. Hater, said, there's no way this dude said something that dumb. He said his brilliant idea is to have a stadium in Maryland that the Commanders and the Ravens share so that they don't have to deal with this stuff. That's my idea.
Huh?
I swear to God, that's real.
Why are we sharing a stadium?
I guess because his brain doesn't exist outside of New York and L.A. And I don't know if he knows it, but the Clippers don't play in the same stadium as the Lakers anymore. But the two football teams do. They both play at SoFi. And the New York teams, they play at MetLife. So I guess Stephen A is just big on sharing stadiums.
Interesting.
I
respectfully disagree.
I don't. I just disagree and think that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my entire life. Is Baltimore in the DMV or not? People disagree, But you know what everybody who disagrees on that can agree with? That's a dumb idea.
Yeah.
All right, when we get back, we're actually talking about defense. We're going on the field. We're done with this stuff. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Nikki Javala, Washington Post, joins us to talk about all things Commanders. By the way, the team just officially announced the Von Miller signing. Officially going to be listed as an outside linebacker. So that is how Dante Fowler was listed last year. Tomorrow is going to be a fun show. As I mentioned off the top, I am out the rest of the week starting Wednesday. I have to tend to a family matter for not just the rest of this week, but most of next week as well. So I will be out, which allows us to do a lot of preview without doubling up on a bunch of stuff throughout the entirety of the week. So tomorrow, amongst the things that we will do, is a 53-man roster preview. So we will try to predict the 53 on tomorrow's show. Do we have time for that, Anthony? Do we know when we're going to do that?
We're going to do that tomorrow at 6, I think.
5:30. Okay, so we'll do that tomorrow at 5:30. Also tomorrow on the show, John Keim. He has a big interview. I'm not allowed to spoil it. That would be really bad form if I did. But he has a big interview about a bunch of the RFK stuff that he's doing. I think he's actually with that person taping it right now. He teased that much on his podcast. So I will say that and not be telling tales out of school. But John is going to come on the show tomorrow as well. We'll also do plenty of football with John. So we got Nikki today, John tomorrow. Lots of preview to come. Also later on in the show today, Logan and I did our top 10 Commanders last week on Take Command. If you missed it, 5:30 today, we'll play numbers 5 through 1. We'll also do some WNBA All-Star Weekend recap, and the Wizards have made a couple moves too. So we'll get to the basketball in the final hour of the show. But Anthony, if I look at you, sir, and say, what is the biggest question you have about the Commanders' defense entering the season? What is it?
I think the biggest question would be the team's health, to be honest. I feel like there's not a lot of depth on this team. Like, if players go down, do you have confidence in, you know, a player's backup, or, you know, somebody else to come in, step in, and fill that void? So I think health just all around. And I don't know necessarily what position, but literally the entire defense, I don't think we can afford to lose anybody.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think too, because this is a point that I try to make a lot, which is you don't get to have extra good players, right? So if you are a team that's really, really good, like who's got the best defense in the league?
Probably the Ravens.
Right? And they've got a bunch of great players. But if they lose one of them, they're not dead. Like, they have quality depth, but they also have other great players. And I think that's the thing. Because the Commanders don't have what I would consider any blue chip. I think they have a couple of red chip guys. If we're going to go like blue chip, red chip, average, below average. Like, blue chip is your top five at your position in the sport. Like, Jaden, offensively, blue chip. Or for a guy like Terry, you know, if we're going to go starting receivers, there's two, so maybe it's top 10 in the sport. I think you could consider Terry blue chip. If you want to draw a line at, like, the Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, and say Terry's a red chip, I could hear that argument too. So it depends on how you qualify it. But, like, no matter how you slice it, the Commanders do not have any blue chip guys defensively. They just don't. They have a bunch of really good players. But without that star, nevertheless, stars, to make up for someone else, every injury to a starter-level player feels cataclysmic if it were to happen. I think the best-case scenario for this defense would be... Well, actually, that's a fun game, too. Like, what's the best-case scenario for this defense? The best-case scenario is Marshawn Lattimore returns to the form that he was at the beginning of last season, when he was graded out as one of the best corners in football for the first couple of weeks that he was with the Saints, which I know is something I didn't fully appreciate until we were talking to our guy Dan Pizzuta on Take Command. And I was reading some more stuff that he wrote in the FTN Almanac as well on the Commanders. And it really was the hamstring injury last year that set him back. His play is not as good as it was in like 2018, 2019, but last year to start the season, he was every bit as good as anybody else in the game. He wasn't targeted a lot, but like all of his metrics were very good. So if he turns into a bona fide number one corner, okay. Now we just need Trey Amos to be like fine, which as a rookie and as a second rounder, like we can get fine out of Trey Amos. Nevertheless, if we get like good as later on in the season, you need Mikey to play at just, if he, even if he plays at the level he did for the back half of last year outside, inside, like that's a win. That is a hard position in the nickel. But if he can figure out how to play in there and he's forcing turnovers, especially like that's his special skill. Okay, now we got a secondary we can deal with. Will Harris, his versatility is nice. Quan, his versatility is nice. They play well off each other. Guys like Percy Butler take a second step or a step in their second year in the system. Bobby and Frankie stay healthy and play at relatively the same level as last year. Maybe even production-wise are better because the D-line is better. And then that would be the other big thing is the D-line plays so well on first and second down. They are so solid that they set themselves up situationally to be able to excel and make up for the lack of supreme talent on the edge. But Von Miller has like 7-8 sacks. Johnny Newton and Deron Payne get a ton of pressure inside. Kinlaw, a ton of pressure inside. And this defense is like a top, back half probably, but borderline top 10 unit. And I know that might feel crazy because how could a unit that was so, it felt like it was bad for much of last year, be top 10? But I read this in the Almanac, Anthony, today, and this like blew my mind slash stuck with me. In the first half last year, the Commanders were 9th. Defensively. 9th. They were 31st in the second half. And I think that averaged out to be around 23rd overall. Now, first half traditionally translates better year over year than second half because second half stats tend to be more score dependent. But if you want hope for this year for the Commanders, it would be that they shored things up on first and second down. They gave themselves a chance for the in the secondary. And that last year on first and second down, in the first half, they were pretty darn good. And you'd hope that they can hold that this year. But I'm with you. My biggest concern is that all of that is very thin. If one of the linebackers goes down, watch out. One of these DBs goes down, I don't know how thick the replacement. You can lose one DB because Jonathan Jones is quality in terms of the depth. Up front, if Newton or Payne goes down or Kinlaw goes down, like you're right back where you were last year. So I that to me is the hard part, especially about not having a bunch of young guys that are coming up and hungry and all that. The fact that you've had to fill it in with so many vets is you just wonder what the upside is. Like, I don't think we're going to have a surprise player develop into better depth than we think. We kind of know who everybody is. And if, as long as they can play the role they were signed for, I think they're going to be all right. If not, that's when things get squirrely.
If I were to ask you which group you have more confidence in, because I think from a run defense standpoint, I think we addressed it. But like from a pass defense situation, would you say you are more confident in the pass rush or the pass coverage?
I think that's a great question, and I think we should ask it on the phones at 301-230-0980, and I think I'll answer it next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. 5 o'clock, Nikki Javala, who is doing some hard-hitting reporting right now in Ashburn. Anthony, there's a preview today for media for training camp. Nikki has got some video and pictures on social media. Grass is green, and they've got a new bubble. It's very white. That's, you know, it's clean. It's new.
I'm excited to see it.
So we'll ask Nikki about all of that and more with a heavy emphasis on the and more coming up at 5 o'clock. So, Anthony, repeat your question for me and for the audience, which can participate in the show at 301-230-0980.
Yeah, so I was asking which group you had more confidence in when it comes to our pass coverage. Do you think it's the defensive line, the pass rush, or the back, I guess the DBs, the pass coverage?
I feel like that's such a hard question to answer. It's a good question. It's a worthwhile question exploring. You have to let me know if this answers your question. I feel like the secondary has a higher ceiling but a lower floor, which is why it's so hard. Like if one had a higher floor but a higher ceiling, you'd be like, oh, well, that one. Because that's better than lower floor, lower ceiling. But I really do think like there is a chance the bottom falls out of the secondary. And I don't think the bottom can possibly fall out of the D-line. Like, yes, the pass rush could not be prolific. I think there's no way that it is just like elite as a pass rush. But I feel pretty good that they're going to be better on first and second down, which will set them up to rush the passer in more third and long situations. And they'll get a decent amount of pressure. And Joe can also help them with Bobby and Frankie blitzing in a meaningful way. And that's going to be good enough to get them where they want to go. That's how I feel about the pass rush. The back end, dude, if Lattimore balls and Amos just like, sometimes corners take, sometimes they don't. And sometimes it takes them a little bit, and sometimes they never get it. So like, corner by nature is a flagrantly volatile position. And so, but let's say Amos takes and he's really good from go. He just gets it. He understands. He's making plays on the ball. That's set. Sanders still takes everything he learned outside, inside. And it's like the last great game we saw him play was a Lions game. He's got picks. Like his ball skills are great. He now knows how to apply them. He's a chaos agent. He's also making plays in the run game. He's punching balls out and he forces like 7 turnovers on the year. He's got like 4 picks and 3 forced fumbles. And Lattimore is just locked down on the other side. Kwon and Will Harris are good. Like, that's a really good unit. And God forbid, like, Cain Medrano or Dominique Hampton, one of these safety linebacker hybrids, like, really helps them out. And a guy like Frankie can just blitz on third down. Bobby, you know, I don't know if he's going to come off the field, but, like, they have more range and they can cover a ton of space. Like, that could be pretty good. There's also a chance that Amos is a rookie and he stinks every other week because that's what happens with rookies sometimes. That Lattimore is cooked and then like he's just not good and he's just fighting people. Sainter still plays like he did early in the season last year on the inside, which was very hit or miss. Lots of missing. Kwon is like easily the best player in the secondary and like Kwon's good, but he's not one of the best 5 safeties in the NFL. And Will Harris just doesn't have the thump to play and run support in the way that Chin does. And the upside he gives you is negligent on the pass side. And like, it's just not good. None of the rookies, Dominique Hampton, like none of these guys really contribute. That unit is in trouble. And especially with the pass rush, that's not elite. If they have to cover forever and that is how they play, yikes. Of course, there could be some combination. Like Amos could take, but Lattimore is cooked. Lattimore could be great, and Amos struggles because he's a rookie. That could change week over week, nevertheless, over the course of a season. But did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I guess my concern level would be more for the secondary. I'm scared. I'm more scared of the low floor than I, even if I acknowledge they have a higher ceiling. There, I answered your question directly.
Yes. I think so. Again, because I felt as though the potential for the secondary definitely far exceeds what we have up front, so.
Yeah,
we'll see.
And Chica Camara says on our YouTube stream, Will Harris has surprising thump. That's also true. I should say that. Like, while I don't think he's Jeremy Chin, like he's might be 90% of Chin in terms of some of the stuff you see on tape. So when I say like he could not have that, that would actually be a departure from what he has been. Like, I don't know. I'm trying not to get out of my skis on Will Harris. I think he's a really good player, but also that's like relative to the fact that they're paying him $8 million. All right, let's take some calls here. 301-230-0980. What scares you more going into the season? What's your biggest concern going into the season? And also, like, what are you kind of confident in? We could be positive. 301-230-0980. Aveen's in D.C. Aveen, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, Craig. I'm more confident in the pass rush. And, you know, even if we didn't have name brand players last season, I think we still finished 11th in sacks and 14th in pressure. So I just think that's like Dan Quinn's strength is like he knows how to scheme up pressure even if the personnel doesn't look that way. I have to say, what you were talking about earlier with looking through the ESPN almanac, I listened to your Take Command episode with Dan Pizzuta last week, and it just got me fascinated because he was saying all this positive stuff about Washington. So I listened to his podcast with Aaron Schatz, the DVOA creator, and he said that they ran a bunch of simulations for this upcoming season, and they had Washington coming out winning the division 52% of the time, Philly only 32%, Dallas 12%, the Giants 2%. And he said a big reason why was because they predicted, the model predicted that Washington would go up to mediocre based on all these things I wouldn't have thought of. Like he said, the first down run defense is an indicator of future stuff. So I just thought that was interesting. Like all these things you wouldn't even think of, like you were talking about the early down defense and the first half defense. But with what's going on right now, I just have, you know, fan brain on. Like I'm the most optimistic right now. I'm thinking, you know, I think Dan Quinn has his track record. Like, I don't know, like, how exactly things look personnel-wise, but he's one of the best defensive coaches, and he has a track record of, you know, getting stuff out of players that you wouldn't have thought of. So, like, Kinlaw, he can unlock something. Maybe Newton takes a leap. You know, we have Von Miller now. We got a lot out of our old guys nobody was expecting last year. And even in the secondary, I'm confident right now because it's like the season hasn't even started, but you were saying, Lattimore not injured. When he's not injured, he's good. Dan Quinn has a record of developing young DBs. Anderson last year, maybe Amos this year. So all confident for me, but, you know, it's fragile.
It is. And that's part of Ian. Thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Part the NFL, like you just, as I said, you don't get to just carry a bunch of extra good players unless you do that well in the draft, right? If you draft a bunch of dudes, okay, but getting a bunch of, you know, veterans, like that's not going to be possible. They're too expensive. It's a salary capped league. But there is definite upside here. And, you know, one of the things that, look, Warren Sharp isn't my favorite. I think he comes to a lot of silly conclusions with what is very interesting data. But one thing that I know that he has talked about that is, seems to me more of a, like just a logical, conclusion or like an impossible to manipulate conclusion is year over year, the first and second down first half numbers tend to translate a lot better than anything else. So like how you play on first and second down in the first half tends to be the best predictor of offensive and defensive success in the ensuing years. Obviously, there's going to be exceptions of that, and a team like the Commanders that has had a lot of changeover, I'd be curious to study that through the lens of like a team like the Lions, who has a new coordinator. Like, what are the things that cause the biggest deviation statistically? Because I just felt like saying deviation because I'm a dork. But like, what are those factors? But if you look at the Commanders structurally, if they were pretty good in the first half, and especially first and second down, then like that's something you can operate in. But that's also why like the pass rush stuff matters because, okay, great. You did well on first and second down. Can you get home on third and long? Or are you just going to be cooked because you don't have the ability to crank up the heat? The Commanders, when they were at their best last year, did that stuff. That's also a lot of times when you can force turnovers when you can crank the heat a little bit. But we'll see how that obviously goes down this year. We can get back to more of your calls on that later. Also, again, 5:30, speaking of Take Command, Logan and I did our top 10 most important Commanders. You'll hear 1 through 5 if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, coming up at 5:30. But next, Washington Post Commanders reporter Nikki Javala joins us.